Hello and welcome to Only Fools and Brotherly Forces. We are now into series 3 of our Only Fools and Horses rewatch podcasting. My name is Bobby and I'm here as always with my brother Jamie. How are you doing, Jamie?
Not too bad. This episode is the episode for those of you, the more astute of you that remember, that I watched in error for the episode one of series two, however long ago that was that we recorded it.
Oh, I bet that'd be 8 weeks, wouldn't it? So what was that episode? Long Legs of the Law.
Long Legs of the Law. I actually had the notes already, but I had to go back over it because it was completely discombobulated.
Nice.
I had to rewatch everything. So I found some new notes that weren't in there previously. My note taking sort of changed a little bit as well, so it wasn't quite up to scratch. But hopefully it all flows nice and well. I think you've probably done a bit better on this one than me.
We'll soon find out. Yeah, I found this one quite a deep episode. Like, as in, it had depth, not as in like emotional. Like, there was quite a lot to it. It was really interesting. I am kind of looking forward to sort of slowly dissecting it.
Yeah, I found it a bit somber and a bit, I don't know, it didn't have the pizzazz of some of the other episodes. We'll see what the contrast is, but we clearly have perceived it a little bit different.
Yeah, I think it always makes for an interesting episode. I did check one thing, because this is something I did at the start of Series 2, so I thought I'd just do it again, and that is I checked the viewing figures. There was a massive downturn from the first episode of series one was 9.2 million, I think it was, and then it was like 7.5 million for the first episode of series two, and then here we are, first episode of series three, and we're back up into the 9 millions, in fact 9.4 million. So I believe it makes it the most watched episode so far. So that's interesting, and I did see a little while ago, I know we talked a lot at the time about when did the show become popular and at what point, and if I recall correctly, as I read this a couple of weeks ago, it was series two that was repeated, I think due to writer's strikes or something, and that's when it really began to get traction. So series three is when it was really begin to kick off and was well known and appreciated. Yeah, absolutely.
I think I always, like I said in the last episode, I've always really liked series 3 or season 3. I don't know why. I think it's just one of my favorite seasons and season I know well. That being said, this episode wasn't my favorite. So I'm looking forward to the next episodes more, but it was still a good episode. It was still good. Lots of cool stuff.
Cool. Well, without further ado, we should get into it. It's Series 3, Episode 1, Homesick. Stick a pony in me pocket. I'll fetch the suitcase from the van. As we often do, it is Del Boy in front of the mirror for the start. We talked about this a lot, actually, in I think it was just the last episode. And he's making himself all prim and proper. Rodney comes out of Grandad's room and informing us that Grandad's not well. He's got a leg problem of some description. Rodney is getting himself ready to go to a tenants' meeting for the local housing association. I was a bit confused if this was just for their building or a region or the whole, like, Peckham Council. I was a bit confused as to the scale of what this meeting was for.
I think it's just the estate. I was on some of the other notes I was reading for the episode, it says something about the estate, so I think it's... Mm. I think there's three flats on the estate. I'm not sure. Maybe there's more.
Right, yeah, because I wasn't sure, because obviously Trigger ends up being there, and he definitely doesn't live in the same flat, and I didn't think he even lived that close, so I was a bit confused by that. But whatever.
Good point.
He's going off to that, and he's on one of his, Rodney Good Samaritan moves, where he's trying to prove he can save the world in a very, woke student kind of way.
Again with a woke...
Yeah, I mean, Rodney is like quite 80s woke, you know, like he thinks he's environmental and socialist and all these sorts of things. He's never actually good at following through or anything, but bless him, he tries. Del Boy is, of course, meant to have been going with him, but he's cancelled because he's got himself a hot date instead. But does offer a nice little tale to Rodney for something he could bring up at the Housing Association at the Housing Association meeting. I quite enjoyed this little joke.
Yeah, Rodney's taking some notes, trying to find out some local crime to report that's been going on in the state for a bit more police presence, but not too much, as Dale says. And Dale spins a story about a local girl called Rita Aldridge.
Last Friday night, she was indecently assaulted over by the Adventure Playground.
No.
Yeah.
Did she report it?
Yep. I saw her this morning. She'd just been down to the police station.
Right, there you are, you see. That is exactly the sort of thing... Hold on a minute. If this happened on Friday night, how come it's taking her till Wednesday to report it?
Because she didn't know she'd been indecently assaulted until this morning when the bloke's check bounced.
It's a bit of a, I don't know, quite a casual joke about prostitution there. I guess it's reasonably prevalent on some of the grottier estates of London.
Probably still is. I mean, it's one of those it's one of those great jokes that there's no words in it that you can't say. There's no sentences, so you can get away with it on a family show. As I've said before, jokes like that that I just never would have got first time round, but now do, and it really cracked me up. I thought it was a really nice playing the line joke,
and it got a massive laugh from the audience, that one as well.
Rightly so. But moving on, we are now at the said Housing Association meeting, and Rodney is in a very large, empty, like village community hall, waiting for stuff to kick off. Clearly, no one else is in attendance except for the chairman of the association, who's doing something I really hate, which is when you have a smoker just sort of sitting there coughing their lungs up mid-cigarette. It's just like, I mean, come on, it's like trying to light yourself on fire when you're on fire. It's like, there's a fix for this problem. Just put a fag out at least till you've stopped coughing your lungs up. What's wrong with you people?
Yeah, it's, times have changed, hey? You're actually having a smoke right there in the council meeting. Or not that it's many people there, but...
Yeah, I guess indoor spaces. Although Rodney does point out the no smoking sign, which the chairman would have had to actively put out, by the way, being the only one there. He's turned up, he's set up the table, he's put out a vice chairman, a chairman little sign.
Placard.
What? It's a triangle thing, isn't it? I don't know what you call it, like a sign? Anyway, and a no smoking one, which he's actually put up, then lit a fag, and when Rodney's putting it out, he's turned it down.
They might have had a little dog's body that did it for him, you know, like a roadie.
Roadie. No one else
come
is
out
there.
And set it all up.
He leaves a minute later for a pint, and no one follows him but Trigg.
So Q Trigg. Trigg walks in, and something that I had forgotten happened, and certainly not this early. And we address the whole Dave thing really early.
Mm.
Rodney quite directly says to Trigger,
Trigg, why'd you call me Dave? My name's not Dave. My name's Rodney.
And shortly after the exchange, I mean, Roger Lloyd Pack very instantly says, me and Dave haven't got all night, which is a little bit of a forced joke and probably isn't done brilliantly, but it's funny nevertheless.
I really liked that whole exchange between the two of them. I think Roger Lloyd-Pack was so deadpan, so like just staring into the abyss of just, huh, interesting, this is genuinely completely new information. Like, how very odd. It's just a really fun exchange. I really like the way he plays it.
But seconds later, for the first time that I think ever on the entire series, he does call Rodney Rodney in the next sentence when he says that he nominates Rodney to be chairman. And I think that's probably the only time he ever refers to him as Rodney.
Yeah, that is a good shout. That is definitely the only one. So it transpires that there is no vice chairman and business cannot proceed until there is one. And here Rodney gets tucked up as Trigger uses some really basic reverse psychology, or at least I think he's using reverse psychology. He might just be stating something he knows to be fact and not aware of this reverse psychology that he's putting up. Are you following me here?
No, go on.
Well, no, because he votes in Rodney to be vice chairman, and then when Rodney tries to refuse, because of course Rodney is the classic complainer that has no actual solutions. He just likes to complain and doesn't actually want any real power. But then Trigger says, oh, you know, Del's right that you can't, take responsibility.
Oh, no, see, this, when he says that, for me, I thought that, so, kind of giving away a bit of the plot here early on, but I think it's probably the point to give it up. So, we know throughout this episode, as we go on, we know that Del has basically fabricated this entire thing. And I am curious to how far this goes, because when Roger Lloyd-Plack says this, when Trigger says it, it's really like, it sounds like a line, and it kind of feels like he's been fed it by Del. And I do, and I was of the opinion that basically the entire everything throughout the entire episode from that very moment has been orchestrated by Del.
I have never felt stupider than I am in this moment. For some reason, I always thought it was weird that Grandad was already complaining about his legs. However, it was this series of convenient events that Del Boy then goes, aha, I see an opportunity, and then the plans start there. But no. No one being there. The chairman resigning, Trigger, this is all part of it. You're completely right.
Yeah, I mean there are...
I've never noticed that before.
There are... I did read some stuff on... I thought this while watching it, but since then, looking at some online stuff, there are, you know, arguments to say that Del wouldn't have known that no one else would turn up it is for the whole estate.
He could easily stop everyone turning up.
Yeah. He could well have done. You know, it's all ifs and buts. What I'm saying is it's just not conclusive. But either way, my gut instinct when Trigger says what he says is that it's probably all been orchestrated from that point. Obviously, everything else clearly is, because Grandad later on jumps around and never had bad legs, and we find out that he did the lifting. So, you know, we know the scale of everything that he's done, but I think it probably started here. Well, at least that was what my impression was.
I genuinely had never considered it started here. I can't believe that had never occurred to me. It just all seemed...
Maybe because I watched it twice. I don't know. Maybe the second time, because I had reminded myself of it. It's a bit like watching... what's that film that you need to watch twice? Sixth Sense. You know when you see like all that, you realise that he's talking to dead people or whatever. Maybe it was a bit like that. Just I viewed the whole thing knowing that Del had tucked everyone up.
It's like a proper like Ocean's 12 thing going on here. Like it's already happened. Crazy.
So yeah, pretty in depth as you said there. Anyway, so he manages to get Rodney up on the top table as the vice chairman, and then gets tucked up again by the chairman, who says the first item on the agenda is his resignation, and Rodney becomes a full-on chairman.
I mean, it's a big job, actually, being chairman of a housing association sort of thing.
I mean, you say that, no one else has turned up, so...
But then why is that? Mm-hmm. But I mean, where I am now, for example, there's always like little councils for the like housing groups you're in or whatever, like the series of houses or apartments or whatever, and it's usually a paid job, like an all right paid job, because it's looked at as something that might take sort of 5-10 hours a week, and kind of the pay is actually quite high. I mean, I definitely wouldn't do it because it seems like a massive pain in the ass of a job to do, but it seems like there's quite a lot to it. The scene ends with a really nice zooming out of Rodney in this empty room, and
it's nice in the fact that it's a good shot theory, but it is a really poor shot. It drags out in a very sort of cliche bad pan out, and it's a little bit jolty. It's a good idea, but it was really poorly executed from the cameraman. It wasn't smooth at all.
I don't know. I kind of liked that there was... For me, this is probably reading too much. It definitely is reading too much into it. But I felt like there was this fun duality of it, of Rodney slowly becoming aware of his power and being quite excited about it, while also us juxtaposingly seeing an empty room. And I thought that was fun, kind of watching him get more and more full of power, while we're made more of to understand that there's no one for him to give any power, like to display his power to.
Yeah, for sure. There's a real sort of like, I don't know, would you call it, an artistic undertone?
Yeah, I almost would, yeah.
Yeah, but it's still poorly shot, either way.
And that's maybe.
And then Rodley has a little lean back in his chair as he's chuffed with himself and falls over backwards. Nice little end to the scene.
Which is also very well done. Like, it sounds like he falls straight on the floor. I'm not entirely sure how they did it, but it looked very good.
Yeah, not too bad. Because if you want the best, but you don't ask questions, then brother, I'm your man. Scene three, back on the now familiar market, getting quite a few market scenes in this episode and series three. And first thing we, well, one of the things we get, it's funny because I recognised this old lady. I don't know if you did. When
I did, yeah, as well. Yeah,
when she came up and she was asking about, has he got pineapples or whatever? I recognised her, so I had to look her up. And
I recognised the first old lady. You recognised the second one who asked about pineapples?
Yeah, I didn't actually realise when I looked up the second. It then said that the first lady was in there. I didn't realise, but both of them. So it's Renee Roberts and Jilly Fowler. Who both played Miss Gatsby, well, not both, they each individually played Miss Gatsby and Miss Tibbs, the characters from Fawlty Towers.
You see, it's funny, I recognised the first woman, and I didn't recognise the second, and then when I went to look it up, then it transpired, and interestingly, it was the opposite. Because I think I recognised her voice, rather than, you didn't see so much of her face the first one, where the second one, for some reason, I didn't recognise her face, which you'd think is the one I'd get. It was actually the voice that triggered it in the first one for me.
Yeah, I wasn't paying that close enough attention. But yeah, funny to see those two together after we were talking about Fawlty Towers last episode or the episode before.
Yeah, I think it was last episode. Yeah, that was weird. We then get like a classic Oliver Twist pick, little boy nicking an orange.
Yeah.
Which I thought was just quite quaint. Did you notice this is so lame, but it's something I can never resist doing. Did you notice the price of the oranges? What do you think?
I love it when you say, did you notice something? No, I didn't notice. Yeah. How much were they?
It was 3 for 25p.
Oh, bargain.
That is cheap, because I'm thinking that's...
I don't think it's like ludicrously cheap.
I would have thought, yeah, I just wouldn't have thought that it'd be that in abundance as much then as maybe it would be now. Like, there's more exported fruit now. I would have thought oranges were a bit more of a luxury back in...
Well, it did say there were some from Seville, hey, so it's not too far away.
No, it's not exactly like Florida oranges, but...
But yeah, so that sounds about right. Granddad starts walking through the market looking pretty mopey and comes up to Del and Rodney and starts talking about... Well, they address that he's not feeling very well and he says he's doing okay and... Ask Del if he likes haddock pie.
Yeah? What have I got, Granddad?
Do you like haddock pie, Del?
No, I don't.
You got haddock pie.
Which he doesn't, so I think decides to give Rodney haddock pie for dinner.
I love a good haddock pie. That sounds great.
Yeah, I don't mind a bit of haddock pie.
I tell you what, I meant to say at the start of the scene, it's very unclear at the start where the timeline, like... Because the way Rodney says he's just gone and met someone makes you think, oh, well, it's not the same day then. But then Del's talking about how he's been away for hours. So I was really confused about the timeline. I was like, is this he's come straight from the council meeting to Del? Or like, obviously via meeting the, Miss McKenzie, who he talks about. Or is this like another day where he's buggered off on council business? Because he talks like he's buggered off another day on council business.
Yeah, this did cross my mind, and then I realised that it didn't really matter, so I stopped thinking about it.
It doesn't, but the question does interestingly get answered later on, where it's that night, I think, I've seen the doctor, and he says how he's only been chairman of the council for 2 days or something. I think it's like the next day, rather than he's come straight from that meeting.
Okay, cool.
I think. But yeah, anyway, Rodney's talking about what he's been doing as chairman of the council group and then get a bit big for his boots, saying, oh, I can't be lugging around boxes of oranges. But yeah, obviously quickly gets reminded that Del pays his bloody wages, so get a lift in.
And that's the end of the scene. Next scene, scene four, is back in the flat. And definitely hit a bit more of a somber tone here when Dylan opened the door. And we've got Grandad just full on collapsed and seemingly unconscious on the floor.
Yeah, it's a pretty unpleasant moment, isn't it?
Yeah, when they come to find him on the floor, I couldn't help but feel some kind of, like, I've written pain. I don't know if pain is the right word, but, like, shock. I guess there's a little, there's a empathy or a, there's something there that, that you do kind of instantly feel connected in it. Even though, you, again, you know nothing's happening. If you're watching this for the first time, you've got to be a bit like, you know, holy shit.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know he's ill and he is an old, you know, an old man. He was looking pretty tragic in the last scene. So, yeah, totally. But, of course, they have the solution to all illnesses in England up until, I think maybe this has changed a little bit, but not much, is you see any detective show or sitcom or any drama, if any ever anyone's in trouble, brandy or tea. That's it. They're like the solutions to everything. If someone's needs calming down, cup of tea. If they're in a bad way, they need distracting or something, maybe they need something stronger, so a brandy or a whiskey. I'm pretty certain this is just an English thing.
Do you know where it spawns from? I mean, the guy's passed out. How? What? In what world? What side effects and or, you know, what's helping here? What is brandy doing for you?
Well, wake you up, wouldn't it?
I mean, no.
I think that if you wave it under his nose, is it like sniffing smelling salts with, like, you know, the alcohol in the up the nose? And then when he gets up, it'll certainly perk him up. I mean, you know, imagine having just fallen unconscious and someone giving you a sip of brandy. It's gonna,
you know, imagine it falling unconscious through illness and exhaustion. That's the last thing. You wake up, you're gasping for water. So, do you want a brandy, mate? No, bugger off. I don't want a bloody brandy. I want some vitamins.
This is the thing. I want to know at what point this changed, because this is a thing that I've had mentioned to me loads of times, because it's a real, like, English TV trope, especially in old detective series and stuff. It's always tea or brandy in situations where actually a glass of water is really what that person needs.
Del and Rodney are scampering around trying to find some brandy, and Rodney's pulling at Grandad's collar, trying to get him... get him away.
Shall I give him the kiss of life?
I ain't that bad.
He then goes on to mention he was just flicking over the TV after watching an episode of Crossroads, which I thought was an interesting reference, because I don't know if you're aware that David Jason was in Crossroads for quite some time.
No, I didn't, actually.
So it's like a weird fourth wall thing going on there, that it happened to be Crossroads he mentioned. I thought that was a bit interesting.
I didn't know David Jason was on Crossroads.
Yeah, he was for quite a while. I think it was like I read about it in his autobiography. He was what was going to be maybe like a one-off character and end up becoming kind of a semi-series regular. But then I think he eventually left himself because he wanted to do other things and didn't want to be just stuck on there. But no, he did do it for a little while, I believe. But eventually they put Grandad to bed and then proceed to call up the local doctor for some casual blackmailing to get him to come round and have a look at him.
Yeah, so doctor's not really up for it, and Del brings up our friend Rita Aldridge, saying that he knows his good lady wife, and he also knows Rita Aldridge, which is funny when you, well, when we fast forward to the next scene and we see this old bloke basically come through the door. I mean, he's probably
doesn't
only
see the
60.
Type, does he?
No, probably only 60, but I guess those the professionals can be the ones you got to watch out for. Eh? They're high flying. He's probably earning good money.
Yeah, no, that is a bit of a weird one. It's funny, I actually I ended up trying to Google when house calls stopped being a thing for, like, standard GP stuff in England.
Wow.
Because, again, that's the thing you see all the time in TV in, like, the 70s and 80s, where now you'd never expect, like, if your kid was ill or you were a bit ill, to your doctor to come to your house. So I just wondered when that kind of stopped happening. But actually, it turns out it does still occasionally happen. And if you're really bad, you can request it and it will still actually quite regularly happen. I kept finding news stories from only like late last year about them saying they might start trying to get rid of it completely. So, yeah, I don't know when it became less common, but it's certainly much less common now, but apparently it does still happen.
I think it's just a TV thing, isn't it? It's much easier to do that than just have an entirely new set, so...
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely for convenience on TV, yeah, that's probably a part of it, but...
I'm not sure if this is something that we see again, but when the Doctor's coming out, having a chat, telling about the different stuff, I really like all the placement of the oranges throughout the flat. Del goes into his little cigar tin, whatever you want to call it, little ceramic dish, and pulls out an orange first. And there's just oranges strategically.
I didn't notice that. Is it the thing his cigars are normally in?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice that. That's good.
And then when we get into Granddad's room, there's just mountainous amounts of oranges, like you can't see for oranges.
I bet the set designer had a lot of fun on this episode. just like throwing oranges bloody everywhere. But yeah, it's good. So yeah, the Doctor's verdict is there's kind of nothing wrong with him physically. He's just knackered from the fact they live up 12 flights of stairs. Which, to be fair, 12 flights is a lot of stairs. I mean, I would be knackered.
I don't like a flight of stairs, so...
No, exactly. I mean...
I'm not massively out of fit or obese or anything. I just don't particularly like stairs.
No, it says it's just a pain in the arse. I don't think I've ever lived above... I think the third floor is the highest I've lived on. I wouldn't live above a third floor without lifts.
Do we, how old did we say Grandad was in this? He's like mid-70s or something. 74?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, I would be knackered going up 12 flights of stairs regardless.
Yeah, it's a lot of stairs.
But Ian remarks that he's got legs like Nijinsky, not the Russian ballet dancer, but the racehorse, which is a crazy concept.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what he's referring to there exactly. Like
fit and healthy, lots of meat on the bone, I guess.
Yeah, but he's not actually like a racehorse, is he? He's a 75-year-old man.
It's a simile, or whatever you want to call it. And yeah, I think he just says he needs rest, doesn't he? He just says Grandad needs rest, and he could do with living... on a ground floor accommodation, and Muse is trying to find out who the chairman of the Tenants Association is, and Rodney sort of rather sheepishly comes in through the door. And yeah, I mean, it's clear here again that we see that Del's building up this whole picture, and again it's sort of validated how in depth he's gone to get all this story going.
Yeah, he's a bit less subtle here. You can kind of see the twinkle in his eyes at this point. He's just like, good boy, Rodney. Good boy.
Yeah.
It's very good.
So we go into Granddad's room. Again, oranges everywhere. And Del's having a little chat with Granddad. And Rodney walks in with some oranges. And
is it possible?
I didn't know.
It's a great joke. It is a really good joke.
Yeah. It is completely unbelievable, but it's so good that no one cares.
Look, Rodney's brought you some oranges. I'll put them over there, shall I, with the other 3,000?
And then we get one of the just brilliant granddad stories. We're going old school, we're going war again. And he starts talking about the Boer War. Do you know much about the Boer War, history buff?
A little bit. I mean, he actually specifically talks about the Battle of Rorke's Drift, which came up again, I think it was our last episode or the one before, against the Zulus. So, not a ton, but a little bit.
This was circa October 1899 till May 1902 was the Boer War, and it was between the British Empire and the two Boer states, which is the South African Republic and the Orange Free State, over the Empire's influence in South Africa. So going back a little bit of time, it was Grandad's granddad.
Which is mental to think that's not many generations, is it? And you're talking like battling with, you know, these single shot rifles against tribes people in Africa, like a granddad's granddad. I mean, for us, you'd probably add another granddad to that, but that's not that many, is it?
It's one of those funny sort of... I mean, this is going to be a little bit more than we need to go into on a podcast, but old people are... You know, old people, the old generation, the grandparents and stuff. You know, that's a lot of years, 74 years. You know, if you go back three or four generations there. We're talking about 150 years for every two generations. Four generations, 300 years. What was happening 300 years ago? I mean, they barely using tools then. I don't
know. Had they invented the wheel?
They'd just gone from stone, I think, to brass or whatever it was. Bronze, not brass.
Yeah, it is mental when you like you're speaking to people that could have been there at those times. But yeah, it's very interesting.
But we get a really classic granddad story of the wartime, and he talks about, he asks Rodney to grab what's under his bed, and he brings out a little cigarette case, and this is some of the story.
What's this big thing?
Oh, there's a story behind that, Rodney. See, one night my granddad was on sentry duty, standing out there alone in the middle of Africa, and suddenly a sniper fired at him. The bullet was aiming straight for my granddad's heart. But he had that cigarette case in his breast pocket, and the bullet hit that instead.
Jeez. It saved his life.
Well, not really. See, the bullet ricocheted up his nose and blew his brains out.
Yeah, interestingly enough, at the end of that story, there's a joke about how Dell thinks they were actually fighting the Welsh. There's a reference there. I don't know if you got that.
I did hear it.
Yes. Yeah, so what that is there's the battalion that fought the Zulus at Rorke's Drift. There's like a common, like what actually turns out to be a bit of a historical myth that group, that battalion or regiment would be the word, isn't it? Were all Welsh, but actually less than half of them were. But it kind of became a big recruiting tool that was a Welsh regiment fighting the Zulus, but it wasn't. It was a mixed British regiment.
Dell goes pretty hard here, and you know, Rodney's in the previous minutes leading up to this said that, you know, he can't abuse his position of power or something to that effect, and Dell says, you know, don't worry, Granddad. He'll remember what he's done to you, which is
brutal,
kind of pretty heartless. Yeah, and like, bear in mind, this whole thing, as we've said, has been orchestrated by Dell from start to finish. He's now, not only they're pulling the wool over his eyes, but now they're like super guilt tripping him to make sure that they obviously get the result they're after.
Full on manipulation. But I mean, then Granddad's turning it up to 11 as well. You know, Dell, I want to be cremated and all this. You know, I mean, they're both really dialing it up.
Oh yeah, for sure. Granddad is absolutely just Hollywooding the hell out of his illness. And it's funny because you kind of, once you watch it like the sixth sense the second time and you know that he is faking it, it kind of does seem almost overacted.
Mm.
He's somehow overacting because he's acting. I can't even get into the levels of the stuff that he's doing. But either way, he's doing it brilliantly, and it's so subtle that you probably don't notice it when you first watch, but if you rewatch it, he actually is kind of emphasizing the fact that he's ill when he's clearly not ill.
Yeah, you wonder if they worried about that sort of thing, like if they worried about the rewatch and thought, okay, this has to be believable that Granddad could pull off this act. So, but is that slight theatricalness deliberate to show that it's Granddad acting, and then is it even believable that Granddad could act that well? But I like that. It's very, it's all very meta.
Yeah, it is kind of a bit crazy. I guess that there would have been a comment to sort of say, you know, you are over-egging it, but it's still very nuanced to try and actually do that in a way where you're not one side of the coin or the other.
Mm.
Either way, it's, you know, it's objective and up to interpretation.
But eventually Rodney does agree that he is going to give a call to Miss McKenzie, who is the head of the housing department specifically, and put in a good word and try and get him a new place.
Enter Miss McKenzie, or exit Miss McKenzie from Granddad's room, and Dell bursts into the flat saying that Miss McKenzie's going to be along any minute, tied at the flat, and Rodney sort of says, oh, Dell, this is Mrs. McKenzie, or Miss McKenzie. And Dell says a little French phrase. She says, entendre, which, I don't know, it means hear or sound or understand. So it just makes no sense. Mm. And shortly after, we get another one of Dale's my most favourite names, Margaret. Maybe we should tally his most favourite names.
He's got a lot of favourite names.
One? Heather and Margaret.
Heather, yeah. I thought this was a bit of a weird one because Dale was clearly expecting some old biddy, working for the council, and instead it's this young, pretty, very well spoken woman. Pretty much rips her arm off to kiss her on the hand. I don't know if you noticed that.
Just the whole thing is horrible. Bear in mind we have discovered that he can flirt quite well. He has got a lot of charm. He does pull girls. He is absolutely dying on his ass for the whole 5 minutes. Like, the whole thing's almost cringy. He's getting everything wrong. He's walking around the place like completely unnerved and comes sitting on one side of the sofa, sitting on the other side, you know, completely messing up Nijinsky, talking about the Russian ballet dancer that died, you know, 50 years ago and was also a man. I mean, I was almost cringing, and it comes to a head when she says that she signed off on the bungalow, and he proper goes in for another sex pest Dale move and literally like gropes the hell out of her knee, like really going for it as well.
The whole scene is pretty awkward.
Not even the subtle hand, but last time, but he's literally squeezing. And I'm just like, this is torturous, like so, so bad. It's just not the Dale that we know and love so well.
And what's odd is often when these sorts of things happen, because sometimes this happens in, you know, one-off moments, but to see it, like you say, constantly happening is unusual and quite awkward to watch. But it's funny that then Rodney points it all out afterwards, which is unusual that Dale is made aware that he's been a prat. And you see he's like quite pissed about it as well. He starts beating Rodney with the newspaper. Most of the time when he does this sort of thing, he actually never is made aware of what a muppet he's been.
Yeah, it is definitely pointed out Tim Rodney, and I think it's Rodney's got a bit of place to finally have a take the piss out of the Dell a little bit, because the shoe is normally on the other foot for sure. But as he sees Miss McKenzie out, he says, "Mon Dieu." Another French phrase and a classic bonjour. But he's asked her out for a drink and sort of said, you know, you want to come out for a drink? And she's like, nah, allow it. Not going to be going for a drink with you, you nutter and you sex pest. I'm gonna head off.
Yeah, her no is the least surprising thing that's ever happened ever, and is then contrasted with the most surprising thing that's ever happened ever, which is her returning later on to accept the offer.
Yeah, but before she comes back, Granddad's sort of come out asking if they've got it, and they burst into a bit of a sing-song.
Yeah, of course we've got it, Granddad. Look, we move in next week. Ah! Hey, my old man said, "Follow the way, dilly-dally on the way." Hey, I'll get you a beer, Granddad. The man with the old man in it. Hunt for the dog with the old cock.
Dilly-dally.
And it's funny that they have that little sing-song, because again, I feel like this is the third reference to the last episode in this episode. But we talked about, would they be, you know, Cockney sing-songing? Was this a thing? And here they are having a little knees-up Cockney sing-song in the living room.
Yeah, I guess that does follow on. And this is where it all sort of comes to a head. He starts off with a big smile on his face, and then it slowly drops as he realises that Dell's basically planned this entire thing. Dale talks him around and sort of says to him, look, we needed this anyway, basically, and Rodney concedes that regardless of the fact that it's been in bad faith and they've completely tucked up Rodney, that ultimately it is a good thing. And he remarks that, you know, he couldn't have known about the lifts or whatever, which Dale then concede. Well, he makes a gesture that makes us know that he also messed up the lifts as well. So
the lift thing was absolutely brilliant. The way that line was played was really, really good. But I think, like you say, like Rodney sees the light, because it is reasonable that, yeah, okay, Grandad is actually fine, but he is still a bloody old man, and it is unreasonable for him to, not unreasonable, but it is shit for him living in such a shitty area, and it's not unreasonable that he should have a ground floor, nicer place it's not completely immoral, it's just they've cheated the system rather than really, really cheated.
Yeah, it's a mostly victimless crime, really. Rodney lets go of it very quickly, considering the extent of the lies and deceit that he doesn't still know the full extent of. But nevertheless, he's happy to let it go, which is nice. And then we get the crazy moment where, out of nowhere, I want to know what woman, confronted with all of the terrible flirtation that Dale's just put on, terrible chat, sexual deviance, and just everything else. She's like, you know, she's 2 minutes down the road, down the street, and she's like, do you know what? I do fancy going out for a drink with that that short guy.
If nothing else, she's just had to walk. She's definitely walked to the bottom of the building and got to walk back up 12 flights of stairs. I mean, that straight away would put me off. But yet she just, I don't know if you're meant to think that she's stupid or naive or just you're not meant to think about it too much, but it is completely mad that she'd come back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, no woman is not going to feel offended and or exploited and or just completely repulsed by, you know, just that short segment of Dale. That was all of Dale's worst moments and worst chat in 2 minutes, and she got all of it.
Mm.
And then she's like, do you know what? I still fancy some of that. Maybe he's just got this sexual, you know, well, presence.
I mean,
that...
I mean, when she agrees to it, she almost makes it sound like a business transaction. She's like, you know what? You need to celebrate, and I respect that and understand. It's almost like some sort of weird, you know, cultural assistance.
It's almost like an obligation.
Yeah, exactly. But then the bit that, I don't know if you noticed this, it's pretty noticeable to me, the bit that was really weird is just as they're about to leave the building, leave the flat, Dale's gone back in, he said like, yeah, I'm off out, don't mind me. They're just about to walk out and Dale goes and kisses her on the lips.
Really?
Yeah. He kisses her on the lips and she takes the kiss, accepts it, doesn't recoil. The kiss actually happens, and then suddenly Grandad kind of flies through the door. But I was just like, okay, it was fair enough that she came back in some sort of official obligation that she felt she had to take him out for a drink, maybe because of her business relationship with Rodney, she felt she had to. But, whoa, he just kissed her, like, on the lips.
I'm just looking for this kiss, because I didn't notice it. I know that he comes in pretty close.
I'm pretty sure he makes contact, and she's not pulling away.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They don't actually make contact,
he's
going in for the kiss. So, yeah, she's just somehow just gone to his sexual magnetism.
She's a real yes man. Going with it.
The cherry on the top is when she says, I don't want to drink too much because it goes straight to my head.
Yeah.
And Dale's like, oh yeah, does it? Like, quids in.
I think this is a bit that's meant to make it believable because she must be an idiot. it's the only bit that makes sense. And he even says to her, I was like, oh, don't worry, I'll have you home by 3 a.m. Like, what? I came in at 3 for the first time in months and months and months the other day, and I still haven't fully recovered. And she's got, like, going out for drinks with Dell. 3 is not an early night.
No, and Grandad comes to the door holding a beer and a cigar, full of the joys of spring, and, you know, Dell is clearly quite aggravated by his presence. As well as Margaret, who instantly realises that she's been tucked up herself. Rodney comes to the door holding the keys, and we've just got everyone in the porch, everyone looking guilty as ever. And, I don't know, Margaret says some wet, bloody, oh, I'm going to save you the inconvenience of moving, which I thought was just a really badly spoken line.
I felt like it fit her weird ass character, to be honest.
And then she turns her back and leaves, and Del's final remark is,
Margaret!
What?
We still on for that drink?
I think the bit that was very notable here is when she'd said to Rodney, in fact, she'd actually said in the previous scene, like, oh, I trust Rodney. That's one of the reasons I'm letting this happen. And then she says to Rodney again,
I believed you.
Rodney's,
I believe me.
And he knows. That I think is a great line, because I think I've been in a situation like that before in life where you're like, I at the time I didn't know what I was doing. He's almost innocent. I mean, he was never going to come out and admit it when he found out afterwards. But bless him, it's not really his fault. But, you know, he's going to take the stick nonetheless.
And like so many of the episodes, the Trotter family are pretty much back to where they started, with no worse or no better than they were.
Absolutely. But he's the one who's driving me berserk. Why do only fools and
horses work? La 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 la. So, first episode of Series 3, Blobber Job, what did you reckon?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, originally, I thought it was a bit more of a chilled episode. I remembered the whole, Granddad in his bed scene quite heavily and the stuff with Miss McKenzie, but I forgot that this was the episode with the Trigger Dave conversation, and it felt like there was a lot going on. Like, there was a lot of different scenes, and the actual story was quite rich and lots of other characters. You had the council guy and then the doctor and then Miss McKenzie, and I thought there was quite a lot going on, and of course the market trading as well. So I really enjoyed it, actually. I thought it seemed a bit more developed than maybe some of the previous episodes. Like, you'd seen a natural growth in the scale and scope. I've really enjoyed it, and I'm surprised that it seemed like maybe you didn't.
No, I thought it was a lot less two-dimensional. Like you say, that we got the hall and we got the market, and then we got loads of different extras. All, you know, they weren't amazing, but they all did a good job. But it was nice and varied. I didn't not love it. I think watching it twice has probably poisoned the waterhole a bit for me. I think having watched it once and really concentrated on it to take notes, it's kind of hard to then do it again and then read through our notes. I think I've done myself a massive disservice. However, being able to listen to what you've said and the sort of notes that we made on it, I kind of appreciate the whole episode a lot more for what it was on the whole, although I don't think it was a laugh. It was a lot more somber. It wasn't a slapstick, lots of laughs episode. It was a bit more chilled.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
I think they've had a few of these sort of episodes that are sort of story heavy, and there is a risk of them seeming a little bit more, I guess, dull. But in this case, I was clearly just in the right mood, and I really enjoyed it. I think I was in quite a chilled mood.
I think, yeah, it was a good episode, but it didn't have me falling off my seat, or certainly have any of those bigger laugh moments that I really appreciate.
Yeah, that's fair.
So looking forward to next week's episode. Next week we have Healthy Competition, Series 3, Episode 2. And remember much about this one, Bob?
Do you know what? When I saw the title, I had absolutely no idea, because all I could think of was The Unlucky Winner Is, which of course I know is miles and miles away, but when I thought competition, that was it. But I have since looked up the synopsis and I remember what it is. And yeah, fun episode. A few firsts, always fun. So looking forward to it.
It's funny because I was speaking to my friend last week about the episodes we were going to be doing next, and said Healthy Competition, and he actually said, oh, that's this one. And I was like, oh, wicked, I really like that one. I won't say which one he thought it was, but it wasn't the right one. So,
oh, really?
The entire time I've been expecting to be watching this one, only to look up today and see a different synopsis and be like, oh, that's not the one I thought it was.
Nice.
So I remember almost nothing about this episode. I mean, once I read it, I did, but the same when I read the name, it didn't ring any bells. But really looking forward to next week's episode. Rodney's going to be going alone and looking to split up the partnership.
Good luck.
Happy day. So we'll draw a close on this one. This week's music, there wasn't much mention of music. The closest thing we got was some mentions of some ballet. So I'm going to go for some Russian ballet music. We're going to go for Dance of the Snowflakes by Tchaikovsky.
Nice. Interesting culture choice.
Thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch up with you next week.
Cheers, Jake.
Take it easy, mate.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook /Only Fools Brothers, or on Twitter, we're at Only Fools Bros. Or if you want to send us a longer message, you can email us at onlyfoolsbrothers@gmail.com. Also, really appreciate it if you could give us some sort of rating or review on your podcast app of choice. Thanks very much. Goodbye.